Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 23rd of Elul, the note of Yehuda on a non-Jew minding a Jew store on Shabbat. This is from note of Yehuda, Mahadura Tanyana. He had several editions or several entries of his responsa from Orach Chaim Simon Chavtet. It's from the 23rd of Elul of Tav Kuf Mem Bet, which is 1782. So he gets a letter from some, you know, shopkeepers, shop owners, or bankers, perhaps. But it's a letter from them, and they've told him how they've managed to avoid violating Shabbos issues with a non-Jew working for them beforehand. And he says he was happy to see. It's an interesting tshuva because he's clearly not happy with what they've done. Not that he's unhappy. He thinks they haven't been following halacha as they should have been, although they didn't realize it. So he says, I got a lot of pleasure out of the fact that they're worried about the Isur Shavut, even the Drabbanan, meaning, I always put the word only in quotes, but even though having a non-Jew work for us on Shabbat is, in quotes, only a Drabbanan, it's an Isur Shivut, the Note of Yehuda is expressing his pleasure that they were hoping and they wanted and they cared enough to try to avoid an Isur Shivut. And I didn't, he says, and I didn't want to delay my response at all because I want to teach you the right way to stop you from a mistake that you're currently making. They were actually asking a question about a future circumstance, which we'll talk about in the course of this responsum. But he's saying, but you're doing something wrong right now, and I want to tell you that and let you know. So until now, this store, this shop that they've had, or this bank that they had lending, I think, has been on a street that's mostly populated by non-Jews. It's a, you know, a non-Jewish thoroughfare with a business district, let's say. And they had a non-Jewish employee, and he would sit there, and he ran the store or ran the operation for them, and he was open on Shabbos as well. So they thought that because it's not connected to them anyway, nobody sees it anyway, and the non-Jew is getting paid for what he's doing, that makes it okay. And the Note of Yehuda says to them, well, it's a problem, because since you're giving the non-Jew a fixed salary, right, a weekly salary, yearly salary, whatever it is, but it's a fixed salary, then it doesn't matter to him if anybody comes in or not to buy things, to buy materials at the store, to patronize the store. He gets his money either way. That's a problem, the Note of Yehuda says, because when he sells things on Shabbos then, he's selling it for the Jews, for his Jewish employers. And even though, he says, Mekach HaMemkar itself, buying and selling things on Shabbos is itself a Derabbanan, it's a Shvut, it actually has a source in Nevi'im, but it's a Shvut, it's not considered a Malacha De'oraita. That doesn't make it okay. I mean, it's not allowed, but it's not allowed at the Rabbanan level. And so you might think to yourself, well, this is considered a shvut. A non-Jew is violating the Torah, violating Shabbos on a rabbinic level. That's a double-edged, that's a two elements of a shvut of a Rabbanan to it. Maybe that should be okay. So he says, the Rabbi says, no, it's not true. And there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that might have led them to believe that they were okay. The Halacha Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim Reish Mem Hei Dalet says that a Jew can give a non-Jew money to do business for him, even if the non-Jew does the business on Shabbos, because it's not the Jew's malacha. That's the way the Shulchan Aruch says it. He says that nobody will know that it's the Jew doing it. It's the non-Jew doing malacha, doing a thing, and it's the business of the non-Jew. So these people writing the letter to the Note of Yehuda had thought that that was what they were doing here. If you walk into this store, it's not on a Jewish street. It's not named, you know, Jew store. It's got a non-Jewish employee working there. So people would walk in, they think they're doing business with a non-Jew. So what's the problem? So the Yehuda says, no, and the Shulchan Aruch allowed that. The Nochri, the non-Jew, was a shutaf, was a partner, and took a share in the profits. And the reason that makes it better then is because then the non-Jew is really doing it for himself. It happens to be the Jew will also benefit, but the reason the non-Jew is doing this work on Shabbos is because he, the non-Jew, will get benefit from it. That is permitted. That's what the Shulchan Aruch allows. So if the non-Jew is getting a fixed salary, then he's not part of the business at all. There's another halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and that same siman, in that same section of Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Mem Hei, in Orach Chaim, the next paragraph, where the Shulchan Aruch says, you can also, a Jew can give a non-Jew some merchandise if he set a fixed salary, right? Fixed salaries can also work, as long as the Jew doesn't say to him, sell it on Shabbos. Because then the Jew isn't deciding when it can get sold. He just said, here, I want you to sell this for me, and here's your salary. Your salary is this, and if you sell it, then I'll keep working with you, whatever it is, and that's the way the job works. So then, if the non-Jew sold it on Friday, that would be fine. If he sold it on Sunday, that would be fine. So the fact that he ends up selling it on Shabbat doesn't affect us and isn't our problem. So that's two halachos in Shulchan Aruch about ways in which non-Jews can do stuff which is really for a Jew, and yet it can be okay halachically. One way is if the non-Jew also benefits, if they're partners in some way, that's allowed because the non-Jew is considered doing it for himself. And the other way is if it's not specified that it has to be on Shabbat, then also the non-Jew is doing it for himself because he could have done it before Shabbos or after Shabbos. He gets his money either way. So the fact that he chose Shabbos is his problem and not our problem. I actually once, many years ago, somebody asked me, there are sometimes auctions of, I think, paintings or something on Shabbat or antique furniture. I think probably car auctions also is an issue. And people want to know if they can send a non-Jew to buy something for them. So this Noda Uyuda would be very relevant to that issue. And what he's saying is, if there's some way in which the non-Jew is either... So if the auction's on Shabbos, we're about to see in our tshuva, that's going to be a problem because then you can't say, well, I didn't tell him to do it on Shabbos. But if he's a partner in some way, that'll be more of an out of an opening to allowing it to happen. So in our situation, the Noda Uyuda says, you're putting him in the store and you're saying the store's open 7 days a week and you're telling him you got to sell it every day the store's open. Let's say the store's not open on Sunday even. So every day the store's open, you got to be there. And I'm paying you a salary. So then you can't say that the Jew doesn't care if he sells it today or tomorrow, because of course he cares. That's why the store is open. He has to sell today and tomorrow and every day the store's open. That's why stores are open. So it's like a marketplace that's fixed on Shabbos, which would be like the auction I just mentioned a second ago. Then you can't give an non-Jew something to sell there, or I think to buy there, even if you don't specifically say do it on Shabbos, because it's clear, right? So that's where the Noda Uyuda is standing right now with this case. Then it happens to be the Shulchan Aruch also says in Orach Chaim Shin Zayin, you can't give a non-Jew money to buy you things on Shabbos, but you can say to the non-Jew, you buy for yourself, and if I need it, I'll buy it from you. So that's kind of a heavy wink if the non-Jew knows you're going to buy it from afterwards, but that's the most you're allowed to go to do. And the Magen Avraham there points out that it's because there's no way you can say you're not doing it on the Shabbat, even if you don't mention the marketplace day. Everybody knows when you're going to buy this. If I say, buy me a car at auction, and the auctions are Shabbos, right? So everybody knows what it is. That's what the Magen Avraham says. So even if you don't say it explicitly, since that's the time for it, that would be a problem. And by the way, if you're going to say specifically buy it on Shabbos, you can't say it on Sunday or Monday. It doesn't help that you say it before Shabbos. You can't have a non-Jew. We can't have a non-Jew doing things for us on Shabbat in this way. So that would be true about this store that's open on Shabbos as well, when obviously the owner needs and wants things to be bought and sold on that day. So, and the Noda says he thinks it's even worse than a marketplace day, because here the store is open. It's just open. It's just known as being open on Shabbos. So the way to avoid this, the Noda says, is to include the non-Jew in some way in the business, to make an agreement with the non-Jew that in addition to his salary, from every whatever quantity it is that the non-Jew manages to sell, he'll get a commission. Now, the Noda Uyuda says that actually it can be a very small commission. He said it can even be a penny out of every thousand, but it has to be something. And it has to be based on the volume of sales, right? You sell, you'll get more, because that way it gives the non-Jew at least some incentive. Now, it's interesting to me, he says, I feel a pruta achad. I'm not sure if today that would count, meaning you have to think about inflation. If today a penny, I'll give you an extra penny for every $1,000 worth of merchandise you sell, or every, 1,000 units you sell. I'm not sure that today that would qualify as the non-Jew has a real stake in it, because the non-Jew might not care. It would seem to me that the Noda Uyuda today would say that it has to be an amount of money where the non-Jew really has some incentive or some caring about profiting in that way. And that way, the non-Jew now is sort of a partner in the Shabbos part of the business, and therefore he's doing it for himself, and therefore it should be okay. It's interesting. I once, many years ago, met some people. Actually, coincidentally, just before I was about to tape this year, I saw the wife of this couple who I see, maybe every couple of years, but I happened to see her. So this couple owned a business, whatever the business was, and for whatever reason, some part of the business had to be open on Shabbos. there was a licensing reason, which actually comes up in this tshuva as well, that they also had a license from the government in this Noda Behuda tshuva that they needed to keep, and that was part of the problem and the challenge for them, and that's going to figure in the Noda Behuda's being lenient with them about these issues. So these people also had a sort of a licensing issue, and therefore they had to be open on Shabbos and sometimes on Yom Tov, and sometimes on Pesach, and it was like an issue. And the way he had decided to handle it, which this Noda Behuda would seem to agree with, I once mentioned somebody, like a Posek type of a person, who seemed to have problems with it. I didn't get into it because I didn't want to, but I thought it was a clever idea, and I think this Noda Behuda would say that it was okay. This guy had said that he gave all the profits from that day's work, from every Shabbos and the parts of it that had been open on Shabbos, from everything that was open at a time when he didn't really want it to be open, he gave it to all the non-Jewish employees. So it was like a it became like a profit sharing thing in the business. They got their salaries, plus they got this profit sharing from the business from these times because he needed to be open, but he didn't need the money from it, so he profit shared it. So that's the kind of thing that he was saying. If the non-Jews have a stake in it, then they're opening it for themselves and for their needs. That makes it not us asking us to open it. Now, in the Rebbe's case, he thought the Jews could even take the profits from it, so he was even be more lenient than this person was. In any case, now he says the new problem with this business is that they want to move the business to their house. It doesn't say why. You know, maybe they lost their lease. Maybe the rents were going up and they had a space anyway. But this space in their house wasn't really part of their house, meaning they could make a separate space. And the separate space they made faced a different street than their street. And the non-Jew would not have to go in through their house at all. It was like a separate, you know, sort of like if they had a separate apartment, they were turning into a store. That's what they were doing. It could go straight from the store, from the street to the store, the store into the street. And so you didn't have to know that it was their house. And so, and they say that the only employee in this store is this non-Jew. He works alone. The Jews don't work with him, even during the week. There's no Jews in this store. They're just the owners. They're like the silent partners or the silent things. And I don't know how they don't watch over him or they don't go in to supervise him, but they don't go in at all. So they're hoping to say that even though it's now directly attached to their house, it doesn't qualify as being attached to them because it can be thought of as completely the non-Jew store. That's what they're hoping for. And then they also said that part of what's bothering them here is that they have from the Kaiser, they have a chiriyot, they have like a license, they have a freedom from taxes, I think, is part of what they get. They have a right to operate this business, and they get some preference from the government for it, but that's only as long as they sell for a cheaper price than what the non-Jewish merchants sell for. I'm not sure why the non-Jewish merchants were happy with that, but that was the agreement they apparently had with the government. They had to be the cheap store. They had to be the version of the store that sold the version of this thing that sold for less. And if they close on Shabbos, they have to worry that the Kaiser won't be happy, and the Kaiser will take away this license of theirs. So that's very similar to this case that I was mentioning that I knew of where the person had to be open on Shabbos. It was a very similar thing. There was some concession that he got, and unless he was open all week, you know, it was in a public place, and part of the rules of this public place were the businesses that operated there had to be open all week. So that's the same similar thing here. They're worried about this, and if they lose this license, they'll lose a lot of money. The basis of the government making this rule was they wanted people to have access to this, to what they were selling. It says here, Yishalim Tutlin Ol Delit B'Fnei Lovin. I think it means that they were lending money at lower interest rates than ordinary banks were, and that was something that the Kaiser had a stake in, that poor people would be able to borrow money, and this was an element in this question as well. So the Noda Behuda says, I want you to know it's very difficult because all of the excuses that they're giving, all of the amatlaot, all of the explanations they're trying to give for why they think you could think of this store as not being inherently connected to them, because the problem is if it's inherently connected to them, that raises a new issue that we don't generally like to have work that's being done on Shabbat being connected to a Jew. So let's say somebody, you know, works with a contractor to build a house of theirs somewhere far off. But if everybody who sees it knows it's being done for the Jew, there's a problem there if non-Jews do it. I'm not ruling on that question. I'm telling you what the halacha is on that question. But I'm saying that that's an issue that comes up in halacha, that when people see non-Jews doing malacha, but they're doing work on Shabbat, doing creative labor, but they know that it's being done for a Jew, even if halachically it's really being done for them. So like a contractor, very often is paid by the job, not by the time. So you could say, well, the fact that he wants to work on Shabbos is because he has other jobs during the week. It's a convenient time for him. Nonetheless, if the work is sort of attached to the name of a Jew, That can be a halakhic question. So here, they're trying to claim that by virtue of the separate entry, and that it's only a non-Jew who works there, and so people don't have to know who it is who actually owns this business. So that's their claims. The Rebbe says it doesn't help for the fact that it's in their house, right? And they can, and they could leave it in back in the non-Jewish street where it wouldn't be as connected to them. So they want to move it. Doesn't say why they want to move it, but they want to move it. And he's saying, I'm not comfortable with moving it because now it's much more clearly connected to you because people know you live there. So he says, and also, it's also a problem because even if it was the other end of Vienna, we now find out that that's where it is. It's the other end of Vienna, so it's probably the case of the emperor, the Austro-Hungarian emperor. Nikrate al-Shem Yisrael. Everybody knows that you are the people who got this license, this right from the government. They know that it's yours, and therefore, if it's attached to your name, it's wherever it is. Even if you leave it on the non-Jewish street, it's not going to be so simple to allow it. So therefore, I had to think a lot about it. So he says, first of all, you also, in your question, took it for granted that the non-Jew isn't violating Shabbat. He's not violating Shabbat at all. But any of the actions that he's doing are not, if a Jew were to do them, biblical prohibitions of Shabbat. They're only rabbinic prohibitions. And therefore, they thought in the question, that would mean that they're asking the non-Jew to act on Shabbat in a way that would be rabbinically prohibited for a Jew. And that's a two-level rabbinic. It's a rabbinic, it's a shivut yeshivut. It's the Jew is doing something rabbinic to only produce another level of rabbinic problem, of rabbinic malacha, rabbinic activity on Shabbat. The Rebbe is not so sure. He says the Beis Yosef in Siman Reish Rim Dalid quotes the Mordechai that Jews who buy, this is the story, Jews used to be able to buy the right to collect taxes. So I think the way it worked is they pay the government a certain amount of money, and then they were allowed to collect almost as much as they could get. But it might be that there was a government rate they were allowed to collect, but everybody knew you didn't collect the full amount. So let's say the government said taxes are 33 1/3% of your income, which I don't think it was, but let's say it was, and the Jew would pay the government 15% of the expected income of everybody, and then they would try to collect as much of the 33 1/3% as they could. They wouldn't get all of it, but they would make a profit on it. For a long time, this was a healthy Jewish business. The Jews in many countries did. So the Mordechai writes, so these Jews who buy this right to, it was called tax farming. And they would farm out the taxation. The government would farm it out to the Jews, and the Jews would collect the taxes and get what they could and make a healthy profit generally on what they on the collection. So the Maharam, who was the Rebbe of the Mordechai, had allowed a Jew to hire a non-Jew to collect the taxes on Shabbos, bikibolet. Right? Bikibolet means that the non-Jew takes a percentage of the profit, gets some commission off of it. And the Maharam wrote, so you could have theoretically said that when the Yerushalmi, there was a Yerushalmi that allowed kibolet in this way, that's only when the Jew doesn't specifically say you have to do it on Shabbos. But since, when the taxation case, it's only on Shabbos, you might have thought that's not allowed because you're specifying he has to do it on Shabbos, he thinks it's still allowed because, he says, because he has a Gemara and Misha Hakshich, and because it's a great loss of money to the Jew if we don't allow this. Because you have to collect your taxes on Shabbos as well, otherwise the taxation collecting doesn't work. And therefore he was allowed to. So Beis Yosef says, why did the Maharam have to go look for a Gemara and Misha Hakshich? Let him just say that there's no Iser d'oraisa in accepting, in collecting taxes. That's what kibolet is. No, in accepting the taxes. Him just going around and collecting taxes, there's no issue to write. So there's money passing back and forth. While money passing back and forth is not allowed, it's not us or it's not prohibited to write the level. So that's what the Beis Yosef had wondered. So part of the answer might be that when they collect taxes, they have to write. That's what the Beis Yosef wrote. His answer is they have to write down who they got the taxes from. And writing is a malacha d'oraita, is a biblical prohibition of Shabbat. And you can also say that when you are going to ask a non-Jew, the Beis Yosef is saying now, if you're going to ask a non-Jew to violate Shabbat for you, and it's not b'mako mitzvah, there's no mitzvah component to it, So then we don't care what it is. I mean, the whole idea, where we get the idea of shvut to shvut, that if there's a two-level rabbinic element to this violation of Shabbat, that it's only, that's not that it's allowed, or maybe not as bad, basically says that might only be if there's a mitzvah issue here. But when there's no mitzvah issue, it's just Chazal said we can't ask non-Jews to do malacha for us, to violate Shabbat for us, and didn't distinguish between d'oraita and d'rabbanan. And then the basis is, and what about the fact that collecting taxes is a very public thing? Everybody knows who's being collected for, and nobody allows a Jew to have malacha done for them very publicly on Shabbat. He says that's only when there's no tremendous loss. But if there's a tremendous loss, a great loss of money, and always the definition of pseida, of a great loss of money, is an interesting one. But that might be what the Maharam meant. Because there's a great loss of money involved, if you have to give up the taxation business, so maybe that's okay. So those are the answers Beis Yosef gave. So the Noda Behuda says, what you see explicitly is that accepting taxes is derabbanan, but the writing is an iser d'oraisa, is considered a biblical prohibition, right? They're writing down on the taxes. So here too, when this non-Jew who's working for these people is in the store, he records all the sales. They used to have, you know, I think this is before cash registers, but they had a ledger. I sold to so-and-so for such amount. I took such money. I gave such a change rate. You have to have a ledger to keep records. So he has to write it down. So that's an iser d'oraisa. So they're saying, we're only asking this non-Jew to violate, to act on Shabbos in ways that would be rabbinically prohibited to us. Then he's saying, no, you're not. You're assuming that he's going to write it down. So then he says, my son, my very bright son, Shmuel, the Rebbe says, said maybe they're not the same thing. Because maybe the writing part of the sale doesn't really matter to the Jew what time it happens. Meaning, if the non-Jew could memorize all the sales he made that day and then write them down after Shabbos or the next day, and then the non-Jew just prefers to write it on Shabbos rather than putting the effort to memorize it, so maybe that's just for him. Meaning, we agreed before, the Noda Behuda said before, that I'm putting him, the Jewish employers are putting him in the store on Shabbat, right? They're telling him, we want the store open on Shabbat. That's asking him to do it on Shabbat. But the writing, the Noda Behuda's son had suggested, we didn't ask him to do it on Shabbat. He's just doing it on Shabbat because it's more convenient for him, as opposed to, because he's afraid of forgetting. So maybe that's not for the Jew's needs. That's the suggestion. And then Noda Behuda is happy with the fact that his son is smart and thinking well, and I like it. And I could say that with the taxation, you could say that there it is necessary to the transaction, because the person paying their taxes is not going to pay unless they get a receipt, because they don't want the tax collectors coming back again. So they're going to insist on a receipt. So that writing is inherent to the tax collecting. Maybe that's why the Maharam was sure that there was a violation of Shabbos at a Torah level, that there's an act of Shabbos violation at a Torah level that we're asking the non-Jew to do, which would have been for us in the taxation case. But maybe in the store, it's not the same thing. And then he adds, that's what his son had said, and he adds that the Ramah actually holds, and this was a shock to me because I think I saw it once upon a time, but I certainly hadn't remembered it. In Orach Chaim Shin Vav Yud Aleph, the Ramah takes the position that if you write non-Hebrew, write other languages, that's only a rabbinic prohibition of Shabbat. It's only a rabbinic violation of Shabbat. The violating Shabbat in Ketivah, in writing, is only on a biblical level in Hebrew. Okay, so so why, and he brings it up because there's a halacha that says that if somebody is trying to buy property in Eretz Israel from a non-Jew, that the great goal of, you know, of retaking, of redeeming parts of Israel and bringing it back under Jewish control is so valuable that you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, to have the non-Jew write down the deed of sale even on Shabbat. When the Or Zarur wanted to explain that, he said that's because, one option would be because having a non-Jew write it for us is only the Rabbanan to begin with, and Rabbanan never made that rule when it comes to taking possession of Eretz Yisrael again. That would be one way to read it. But the Or Zarur has said it's because the writing itself, if it's being done in a vernacular, not in Hebrew, is itself not a d'oraita problem, not a biblical prohibition, and therefore it's a shvut to shvut, and here it's a makom mitzvah, there's a mitzvah involved. The Mishnah Berurah, however, there says that nobody agrees with that. The Or Zarur is a lone opinion, and therefore all the posts disagree and say that it is a biblical prohibition, and So, but maybe the Notabi says we can rely on the Rambam because, after all, he's the Rambam. So, yes, he was following the Or Zeruah, which is a rejected Shita in general, but the Rambam accepted it. Maybe that's strong enough. That gets into very interesting questions of Psak, of who we do and don't rely on and when, against what level of opinion. In this case, the Notabi is saying, maybe I could find a way to rely on it on that. Then he says, the fact that people will know now that it's in the house, and they'll maybe suspect the Jew is having the non-Jew it for them. So maybe once it's a shvut to shvut, once it's a two-level thing, maybe there we don't worry about people's suspicions. Maybe that was what part of the way Chazal set up the standard of what we have to worry about or not worry about. Maybe if the non-Jew is only acting in ways that would be rabbinically prohibited for Jews, and the worry is that there would be suspicion that the Jew told him to do it, so maybe that far we don't go with our suspicions on Shabbat, and therefore it would be allowed. And you might say that even the Maharam said there was an issue, we would have had to worry about it. Maybe that's because the non-Jew in that situation only collected the taxes on Shabbos. All during the week, the Jew collected his own taxes. Then for Shabbos, he hired a special guy. So maybe that would be more likely to arouse suspicion that he's doing it for the Jew, because everybody knows that it's been done for Shabbat. But maybe if you hire the non-Jew for the whole week and he's getting a little bit of it and he's just receiving monies and stuff like that, maybe that should be allowed because the non-Jew is doing it for himself and not for the Jew, and everybody would know that because it's all week long. Except that once it's in a Jewish house, as they're trying to move it to, then you have to worry that they're going to suspect that he's paying him a fixed salary, not a commission. Once it's a fixed salary, he's really doing it for the Jew, and all those issues come back, as we saw at the beginning of the tshuva, unless you go back to say, maybe even to then, since it's only Drabbanan, we're not so machbir. So that's where the Notabi really ends up. He thinks that if you put him there the whole week, and he's getting a commission, and it's him, and the writing might be only for his own benefit, not for our benefit, because he just wants to remember, and it's just a memory issue. So all of those, he thinks, would be ways to put it all together, that maybe it's okay. Because you could say, since he's there the whole week, there's no chashah that the Jew told him on Shabbos to do it, or specifically wanted to do it. So he just said, open the store, and therefore you can avoid the suspicion. So the issues we've had to get rid of are the questions of, is the non-Jew acting for the Jew? That we got rid of by saying he'll take a commission for it. Is the non-Jew violating Shabbos in a right away? That we took care of by saying even if he is, it's not inherent to the activity, as it would be in the taxation case, it's because the non-Jew wants to remember it. Now that's an interesting thing about whether that's true. So for example, if everybody takes receipts for whatever this business is, then the non-Jew would have to write in a Doraita level and whatever it is, so that would hurt that kind of claim, but that's altogether, the Notabi thinks there's room to say that if the non-Jew is getting a commission, you might be able to do it. That's halacha below the maaseh, he says. I don't really wouldn't really want you to act on it. And the only reason I'm working so hard to help you out is because you've got this license for the government that you'll lose, and that's really a big loss. That's a big place of a lot of hesed. So he says, he thinks what you should do is rent the store itself to the non-Jew for Shabbos. And then when the non-Jew is bringing the store, the merchandise, into the store, it's his for the day. Because we halakhically assume and hold that renting a store, even for a day, skirut liyoma, renting something for a day, memkar, is a form of a sale. And they should also do it, that in addition to his salary, he gets a commission. And that way, within each and every sale, he's also getting a benefit. And that the non-Jew should be there alone, even during the week, without any Jews there. And then to help him out with the store selling. And then he can say that it's mutter, because then the store really belongs to the non-Jew, at least on Shabbos, and it's not the Jews at all. And all these problems go away. So that's the way the Notabi Yehuda found room. And I think it has very modern implications, contemporary implications, because I think there are times we have these kinds of issues. These are ways, if we want for halakhic purposes, for a store or a piece of business or a transaction to be considered not being done for a Jew or by a Jew, these are the Notabi Yehuda's ways of finding a way to do it. Get the non-Jew to be a partner, get the store itself to be owned by the non-Jew in some way or rent it to the non-Jew, and then there's room, and the less biblical level prohibitions that are being done, the better. And then there's room, the Notabi Yehuda says, in cases of hefsed, of a lot of loss, to allow for it to happen. That was the Notabi Yehuda's tshuva for the 23rd of Elul on a non-Jew minding a Jew store on Shabbat. Have a great day.